Welcome to the Expert Speak, a service of the Florida Psychiatric Society. I'm Abby Strauss, and thanks for listening.
We are seeing many new approaches to the treatment of psychiatric disorders. One of them is the use of outgrowths of functional medicine. But many of us really don't understand this. We don't understand the concept of functional medicine, and we don't even know how to correctly use the many descriptive labels that have been attached to functional medicine. Achina Stein from Providence, Rhode Island, is a psychiatrist who practices functional medicine and psychiatry. She kindly joins us to describe this very powerful approach to a very real set of psychiatric problems that we need to address. Dr. Stein, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this time together.
Let's begin with just a simple definition. What is functional medicine? What does that mean? And sometimes we hear it called metabolic psychiatry. Give us an introduction to what you're talking about and how it ended up dealing with depression.
It's a great question because sometimes people aren't familiar with functional medicine, and more people are becoming familiar, especially patients. Functional medicine is a relatively young discipline in the medical field, and it's designed to address the root causes of chronic disease through a systems-oriented approach. The concept was created by Dr. Jeffrey Bland in the early 1990s, and he, along with his wife, Susan Bland, founded the Institute for Functional Medicine. They envisioned a shift from the traditional symptom-based treatment models to a more holistic approach that integrates the latest medical research with clinical practice to treat chronic disease by addressing their underlying causes. Our conventional standard of care or standard treatments are really acute care. We're fantastic at doing surgery and procedures and finding diagnoses and treating issues that are going down a decision tree and coming up with a diagnosis and solving the problem with a medication. But over the decades, we've found that more and more people have chronic disease and that the medications don't necessarily solve the problem. It's not just with mental health, it's also physical health as well. So we are finding over time that more and more people are on a variety of medications for a variety of issues. There's not necessarily someone who's overseeing what is causing all of the problems, perhaps. Maybe they're all connected. We tend to silo our treatments in the standard of care, the current conventional care, rather than connecting all the dots and looking at the whole picture and perhaps finding root causes that could be addressing not just the physical issues, but also the mental health issues. The origins of functional medicine can be traced back to ancient and traditional approaches to healthcare, emphasizing holistic well-being and preventative care, like traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. The development of functional medicine is supported by advancements in genomic and epigenetic research, highlighted by the significant impact of diet, nutrition, and environmental toxins on the development of chronic disease. The IFM has played a very crucial role in educating healthcare providers about these principles and in promoting a patient-centered approach to care. It has boomed in the last 20 years, actually. With this, there is a great deal of data that has been provided by certain institutions collecting that data, indicating how necessary it is for more personalized treatment.
You obviously have a great deal of data. You're obviously well-trained. Most people do not go to functional medicine first on. When does someone come to you? And then what do you do that's different?
I tend to see people who are very frustrated with the system. They might see a provider that tells them all of your labs are normal, this must be psychiatric, therefore I'm referring you to a therapist or a psychiatrist for medications, or here's a prescription for an SSRI. They may or may not take that SSRI. If they do, they may or may not find that it's beneficial. They might then go to another provider. They're just not getting better. I tend to be seeing people who are actually quite sick with comorbidities and also have depression and or anxiety. It tends to be those two groups of people, not necessarily schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. I consider myself more like a detective. I have a 39-page intake. I gather a ton of information, and I put all of that information of their history, and I think psychiatrists are actually in a really good position to be doing this work because they know how to gather a history, except there's more history to gather that they don't gather, And that would be environmental exposures, their home exposures like mold, whether or not they've been exposed to any bug bites like ticks. Really gathering a ton of history, putting all that history on a timeline to see a progression of how not just their mental health symptoms have progressed, but also their physical health. Yeah, they have diabetes, or they might have had a heart attack, or they might have obesity. We'll gather that history, but we don't necessarily, or the traditional psychiatrist doesn't necessarily connect the dots. Oh, I wonder if your obesity or diabetes is causing so much inflammation in your body that it's affecting your brain. For example, if they've had a history of concussions, or they're an athlete and they have had multiple head or neck injuries because of their sport, then they start having issues with their gut. And then followed from that, they start having depression or anxiety. Sometimes injuries to the spine or the vagus nerve specifically can cause the gut to basically get immobilized on some level. And then you start having digestive issues and difficulty digesting food, which is what you need in order to feed the microbiome and create the nutrients that are in your gut that are then utilized by your brain. So there's this whole physiology that occurs that can be stunted or misaligned and put out of balance over time can create problems. So it's really important to gather that history and try to connect the dots in what I call looking for those perfect storms where two to three things occurred that then cause your immune system to crash, essentially, because it's your immune system that tries to keep everything in balance in combination with the HPA axis. It controls oxidative stress in the body on the cellular level. These are all looking at these systems, rhythms in the body that when they are out of balance, at some point manifest psychiatric symptoms.
What I find so interesting is the notions of taking this out of the silos. You ask a lot of questions that general psychiatry could ask, but we don't. It's not our normal pattern to go into that much depth. But the other two elements that keep popping up are the impact of inflammatory processes and the immunologic system. For a number of years, it's been known that the C-reactive protein is elevated with a lot of psychiatric conditions. Most psychiatrists do not measure the C-reactive protein. You folks are bringing this back to the table. Once you bring it to the table, what do you do about it? You have a different angle on this.
Other than finding those root causes, we find a number of root causes just through the history. We gather more history, and then we do testing. Every patient that I see, I do a stool test. I do organic acid testing. I look for pathogens, and I do comprehensive functional blood work. And that's just foundational. Based on their history, I might add some other things. But it really is arriving exploration through their history and then potentially confirming that through the testing. We then address diet. We address initially in the first couple of months, we'll look at foods. And then once we get the testing back, we might look for chronic infections that might be disturbing or causing an imbalance in the microbiome. And there's multiple root causes of inflammation. So it's finding that. We also look at stress reduction and movement, the sleep patterns, looking at eating patterns, not just what you eat, but also how you eat and when you eat. It could be as simple as I don't eat breakfast and I get depressed in the morning and I don't even realize that it's connected to my diet. So I get a 3-day food diary. I have them look at their stool and document what their stool looks like on the Bristol stool scale. I look at the life stress index. I give them a candida questionnaire. If they are living in an area where, and they have activities where they might be exposed to ticks, I'll have them do Richard Horowitz's MCIS questionnaire. Or if they have had water damage to their home or know that they have mold in their home, it's obvious to them, but they didn't realize just how much mold can cause depression and or anxiety or cognitive problems. So I'll have them do a mold questionnaire and educate. So a lot of this is educating people that there are things in our environment, there are things in our home, there are situations that can occur to your body that can impact your brain, then people have this like, wow, definitely me. That's exactly how it happened. And so we're trained to look at clusters of symptoms that are patterns of conditions or syndromes that can result in depression or anxiety. So for example, you're just talking about your allergies. Sometimes people have such significant allergies that they're not just environmental allergies. There are many allergies that are connected to food allergies. So there might be high histamine reactions based on food allergies. And just by removing the high histamine foods that can actually be caused by mast cell activation, which is a syndrome, a result of high stress to the gut lining. So some people react in that way. And one way to know that they're reacting that way is just by looking at their symptoms, as well as the number of medications that they're taking. So if they're on two inhalers and two antihistamines and Singulair, these are all things that point the finger at looking for mast cell activation syndrome. Part of the treatment for that, changing the diet, but there's also a number of things that can be added through supplementation. For example, diamine oxidase, which is an enzyme that breaks down histamines in the gut. And you can take antihistamines as well, but wouldn't necessarily want to take them long term because of their side effect profile over time. You can make changes and figure out why they're having these reactions. When you bring the body back into balance, I find that many times these medications can actually be reduced and eliminated. If we've turned off the tap of inflammation, it presents itself in so many different ways. And sometimes it's not so much turning off the taps, but also helping the liver and the gut to eliminate these toxins that have accumulated over time in the body, looking for those things as well. So you want to release the drain. If you imagine a tub filling up with water so that it doesn't overflow and cause symptoms, you want to turn off the tap and let out the drain. That's basically what we're doing. We find that antidepressants are really great for acute. I mean, I'm not anti-medication. I still prescribe medications. I have found that when we actually bring the body back into balance, we are able to taper and discontinue, or at least even reduce medications. So it's addressing foods, infections, toxins, stress, all of which can affect your hormones, particularly cortisol. When we address those things in a certain order, it has to be done in a certain order, the total load of inflammation in the body reduces. We track this with a form called the Multiple Symptom Questionnaire. It is used by all functional medicine doctors, and it's used the very first session. Our goal is to bring the total score below 10, whether or not what we're doing is actually working.
This is fascinating because it reminds me so much of you folks going into a completely different domain, a different gestalt, so to speak, of the person's existence to look for everything else, as much as we can find under the term everything, for almost anything else that could be contributing that traditional medicine doesn't do enough of. When I speak to patients just about diet, many of them are resistant, nod their head and say yes. But they're not eating properly or not taking appropriate nutritional vitamins or whatever. And I tell them that the body is designed to work with certain nutritional balance, and they find it hard to do that because they're used to just eating whatever they want. The ones who put themselves on better diets, and I wish I could say it was everybody, it is not, but many, they begin to feel better.
Absolutely. And
so that's what you're doing. It's almost embarrassing for general medicine not to inquire along these lines more, aggressively when people don't get better. It's just simply too often dismissed as treatment-resistant depression, person's got a personality disorder, they're not going to get better. Yes, we have to do those proper diagnoses. But you introduce a whole new category of thinking that's novel for many providers. I find it fascinating. Are your treatments, therefore, they're lifestyle treatments. They're not necessarily lifelong if you can fix the irritant.
They are lifestyle treatments for some people. Once they are through our what we call our treatment phase, which is about 6 months, I have a health coach and I have a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. the three of us as a team create these plans, and the health coach helps them move through the plan because it's overwhelming. There's a lot of things that need to be addressed. They have to be moving their body. They need to be looking at their sleep. They have not just changed their diet. I might have them do some breath work or introduce meditation. It depends on the person as to which activity, so to speak, I would prioritize. But ultimately, it's not just doing one thing. It is doing a variety of things and habit stacking. So we teach our patients about why it's important and get their buy-in, but they might not necessarily be ready to make the changes. So we start with the lowest hanging fruit. I do find that diet is really important. I have actually told patients that if they're not willing to change their diet, then I can't help them, because this is all I do. I do functional medicine, see patients for psychotherapy. I have a handful of psychotherapy patients as well. As I'm doing the interview and the initial session, they might have some distorted cognitive distortions, feeling like they're not good enough or I can't do that. It's like, well, maybe you need to address this barrier emotionally that you think you can't do it. Maybe you can, but that's what's getting in the way from you even trying. So how about changing your thoughts to, I can't do that yet? So we look at trauma, and there's a dynamic that interferes in their ability to trust anyone. So they're not willing to try anything because they're not sure if they can trust what's being told to them. So we talk about that. It's like, well, is this a pattern of the way you interact with the world? And we bring that to their attention. That's also incorporated into the treatment plan. It's a biopsychosocial approach with the functional also added to that. So it's very multidimensional. My plans are 5 to 9 pages long, and it's the health coach's job to help the patient put the plan into action. And when they do, and they feel safe around doing it, and they see the improvement over time, if they do have, let's say, mold in their home, or we suspect that, I might send videos to them. I want you to watch these videos. This is part of the plan. And I want you to think about getting testing in your home or getting yourself tested. We can do mycotoxin testing or Lyme disease testing, things that we look for based on the history that they provided. I've actually had patients who had very high HSCRPs, and given their dental history, I've sent them to a biological dentist to have a CBCT scan, and sure enough, they have an abscess. HSCRP comes down, and guess what? Their mental health symptoms get better as well. The brain is right over the whole mouth. They're very close to each other. There's a very small place between the brain and the mouth. Yes. Of course, it's going to affect your brain. In fact, when you're in pain, the jaw doesn't move as well. Sometimes people clamp their jaws. And when you clamp the jaw, or if there's misalignment of the jaw, it closes off the drainage pathways that can then affect the brain, in that it gets congested, the whole lymphatic or the glymphatic system becomes involved, and that creates inflammation in the brain. So we're looking at all the things that could be causing inflammation in the body that could be affecting the brain, or actual inflammation in the brain that is resulting in these symptoms. It's pretty clear that it's generally more than one cause. And these causes do not get better with medication. It's really finding the root cause and fixing those. When you address each and every one of them, some take longer than others, then people get better.
It's such a refreshing, an attraction to it, a draw to it. So much of it is just, it just makes sense to look at all these other systems that have not been adequately elevated to the level of importance for the level of investigations we do in normal everyday psychiatry. Most of us do not think along these lines. We're too quick, sadly, to just assign something as treatment-resistant depression not otherwise specified. And the poor person suffers.
Right. When I was medical director at East Bay Mental Health Center, I actually had a patient that perplexed me, and she had significant issues with her digestion. She asked me, I noticed that when I take my pills, it just shows up whole in my stool. Is that a problem? this was before I became a functional medicine doctor, but when I think about that case, she also had pediformis dermatitis, which is how celiac disease shows up in the skin. So she clearly, in retrospect, had celiac disease, and she had no idea. No one ever said to her she had celiac disease, but if her dermatologist even talked to her about it or made the connection to her gut and the fact that she's seeing pills in her gut. So if your gut doesn't digest pills, it's not going to digest food either. And she had chronic diarrhea. And I had another patient in the same place when I was working there that he chose to change his diet. And he had a diagnosis of schizophrenia, and he decided, it was to the point where he had disability. All these patients were on disability in this institution. He chose to change his diet and exercise. He started skateboarding. He lost a considerable amount of weight. We were able to reduce his risperdal down to 2 milligrams. He was a new person. He did not want to stop medication completely because he wanted to remain on disability, which is very hard to get off of disability and start a new life on your own. This was before I became a functional medicine doctor. There are cases that I remember thinking, boy, how did he do that? What changed? I was always very curious about when people made changes in their lifestyle, how it really impacted their mental health. I see this day in and day out now. The hard part is the willingness to change. So the people who come to my practice are already searching for other options, and they try these things on their own, or they did get my book, What If It's Not Depression? Your Guide to Finding Answers and Solutions, and they read my book, and they can only get so far without help with these problems, very structured goals in order to meet the endpoints of each area to help assist them, even motivate them and reassure them. I usually tell people to not change their medications unless they're having side effects, because oftentimes people have tried on their own to come off of medications. They found that, like, this is not helping me. Why should I take it? I actually tell them when they start with me not to change the medication, because as they get better, they'll see that it's not the medication that got them better. It's what they've done empowers them to keep doing the things that we've been telling them to do. Ultimately, it actually improves their ability to come off the medication once their gut is starting to make its own serotonin. And then it's easier, actually easier to come off the medication, so they have more confidence in knowing that, hey, it's not the medication that got me better. Sometimes people need to be on a lower dose of medication, and I find that some people might take even up to 2-3 years to come off of medication.
I wish we had more time. This is fascinating. You bring up with every sentence something that needs to be explored at another level. Hopefully, in a good way, intimidates many of the other mental health providers to think about their patients along these domains. I like the word integrated, because that's what you're doing. You're integrating the totality of a person's existence, not the silos of just, unfortunately, which is too often the limitations of how a diagnosis is made.
People are interested in learning more. There is a lot of research about digestion and increased gut permeability, the gut microbiome, inflammatory causes of depression, anxiety, the gut-brain connection, limbic activation, vagal nerve stimulation. There is so much out there. If you're a member of the APA, there are two caucuses. There's a lifestyle medicine caucus, and there's an integrative psychiatry caucus that people can join and learn these things. I just gave a lecture about the 5 overlooked causes of depression and anxiety: stress, hormones, infections, foods, and toxins. Ton of information.
Achina Stein is a functional medicine psychiatrist. She has walked us through a tremendously fascinating area of psychiatry that needs to be part of the general workup, especially in cases that are treatment resistant. But it also brings us right back to the notion of basic root analysis of what's going on. Dr. Stein, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.